Paradoxical as it may seem, but disengaging from life as it is the first step towards Karma Yoga, which is a re-engagement with life. But before we re-engage, we have to reorient ourselves. Because karma is something which is going on all the time. All the time activity is going on. Do we act or action develops in us? That's the question. That's the truth, isn't it? It's like thought comes and then we say it's my thought. It's not like we call that thought. Feelings arise, impulses arise, will and impulsion. And then we act. Action develops in us. That's one of the things that is worth observing. So how can this action which is developing in us become a means for spiritual growth, for spiritual ascension, for inner transformation? That's what the whole question is. And why should we do it at all? After all, it's fine. Life is going on. Everything is good. So what is the necessity? The necessity is because we are soft-wired or hard-wired to progress. We cannot remain static. It's just the way life is, and which is beautiful because this is such a lovely place. But if you are told you can stay 1 month on a free holiday, but you have to do nothing, it will be so difficult because there is a pravritti in human beings. So we are hardwired for progress. We understand it differently. That's a different thing altogether. Progress may mean different things to different people, but all of us have this insatiable urge or bug to act and to progress. And that's why the way of works is the most natural path towards the divine. And interestingly, the most complete. That's what the Gita says, which is so beautiful. It's most natural because sitting in meditation, closing the eyes is not so easy. Closing the eyes is easy, but going within is not so easy. One can close the eyes for 2 hours, have a nice nap, wander into all the inner worlds. The same things which we do outside start jumping inside. And then we may come out 2 hours later, completely the same, unchanged. It's not easy because by nature we are tuned, the senses are turned outward. That's how. Why they are turned outward? Because there is a pravritti, there is a great, tremendous flow of energy which is moving in this direction. So meditation is not easy, going within is not easy. Works come naturally. Similarly, the path of love, bhakti, one is blessed to have it. If you have it, wonderful. But again, here also, love moves towards outer objects. Everything in life, knowledge towards outer objects. That's how things are. So can we make this outward movement towards objects, the movement of energy within us, into a means for spiritual ascension? So this is natural. The movement is natural. Can it become a means for spiritual ascension? That's where the whole crux lies. So it is natural. And it is more complete. It's more complete because when we turn within and discover the divine presence, then the big difficulty or the challenge is how we can integrate this divine presence with life as it is, with everyday life. So there is a tendency to divide life in 2 parts. One is when I sit in meditation, it's so wonderful. Second is when I go out and take a walk, when I meet with my relatives, when I am sitting with my boss or colleague or subordinate, how do I connect the two? So this is the other part, the difficulty. But in the path of works, we discover something very beautiful. And it is this, that the divine is not just a witness who is sitting and watching, or who is moving a wheel senselessly in which we are caught. There is a purpose, there is a will that has gone into creation. And if we can align with that flow, nowadays there is a phrase, go with the flow. The question is which flow, because at any given point of time there are several flows or currents moving through us. And that is the first step to understand about works. Everyday life we make choices from morning till night. We may say, no, we don't make choices. Well, choices are made for us. It's not a good thing not to make choices, because when we don't make choices, somebody else makes the choice for us. We should be very clear and careful about it. I don't make choices, fine. Nature will make the choice. Then we'll be like football, moved around by all kinds of forces. So how do we make the choices? At any point of time, there are several windows that are open. How do we enter? Which one we enter? So these are the questions which arise in the mind of a person who is undertaking the journey. So in any work, we have these three in the path of works. Who is doing the work? What is the energy which is being used for the work? And third is, what is the goal of this work? Towards what this work is directed? So the difference between ordinary action and an action which becomes a means for spiritual discovery lies in the answer to these three. Who is the doer? If Dr. Alok Pandey is the doer, then Dr. Alok Pandey takes the consequences of things. He can't avoid it. He can't suddenly people pass it on to God. Why did he do this? All your life, I am doing with the idea that I am doing. Suddenly you wake up God one day and say, why are you doing this to me? He'll ask us that, well, all your life you have been doing things with this idea that I am doing. So you see this karma bandha, as it is called, when the ego is the doer, there is a karma bandha. It's very logical, natural. But it's not about sin and virtue and vice, that's different. But if I act with the sense of doership, ownership, then I take the responsibility. That's nature's law. So as long as I believe I am the doer, I am not engaged with karma yoga. I am still like anyone else who is doing any other action. Similarly, when we look at the energy, now there are several kinds of energies under which we can act. This is an energy which is an energy of fear. People took a lot of vaccines because of fear. Right? The same thing one can do with an enlightened will. Or one can act under anger. One can act under hate. One can act under compassion. When Shri Krishna takes Karna off the battlefield, slightly away from the battlefield, and there comes a point of time when his wheel is stuck in the ground, and he is trying to invoke the Brahmastra, but he fails. He is not able to remember. And Shri Krishna tells Arjuna, you use the Anjali Astra to kill him. Is it an act of deception or is it an act of compassion? Same act, we will interpret according to our understanding. Oh, she is Sri Krishna, he should have just waited. Now, Karna all is now, I'm just giving that what can be the different motives. It's so important. In Indian thought, motive is far more important than the outer action. So look at the motive. Karna is basically a good guy, but all his life, his ambition had the better of him. A spirit of competition, because of which he could never really release that deep goodness. It's a life that is suffering inside. It has to go, because that is the will of the divine on the battlefield. He could have asked Arjuna to use a Divyastra and finish him, and it was possible. He doesn't do that. He gives Karna a chance to, you know, have his face saving. Even in his death, people will not blame you. They'll blame Arjuna. They'll blame Krishna. So you are dying that way, but you have to go because your actions are not according to aligned with your own deepest soul. It's not aligned with the will of the divine at a given point of time. So when Shri Krishna acts, he is acting in divine compassion. See, compassion can do this act which is so different. We cannot imagine. For us, compassion is, oh, no, Karna, you're a good guy, you know, I'll spare you. He tries that, of course, so that, you know, when he tries to change Karna, I'm just saying with an example, because Gita is the greatest gospel, and if we understand the inner state of Krishna, we'll understand many things. Why does Sri Krishna go and ask Karna to change side? Is he trying to lure him? No, he's trying to save him. He knows if you stand on this side, you are going to be finished. Such is my will. Such is the divine will. So he gives him a chance. He gives a chance to save the massacre. Maybe if Karna shifts, Duryodhan will get some sense into his head. Now you see, the inner motive. There is a line in Sri Aurobindo's poem, who he slays without stint and is full of compassion. He wars for the world and its ultimate years. Now this requires that the mind should be free of all dogmas, viewpoints, opinions, even our idealistic notions, virtues, vice. Otherwise, we'll not be able to act. That was the state of Arjuna. He would have said, no, sir, what you're asking me to do is bad, evil. That's how people interpret even till today. Because as long as we have preferences, we cannot make the right choices from the point of view of spiritual ascension. Preferences means I place my self-interest before other things. Preferences means my family, my people, my state, my country, humanity, all these come before as considerations than something else. What that something else is, Sri Krishna will tell us. So as long as the ego is the doer, there will be preferences, opinions, viewpoints, virtues, vices. This is the play. And there is nothing wrong in living. Again, it's not about right and wrong, or good and bad, but it's a limited play. This play keeps us bound like a seesaw. Whereas Gita is a gospel of freedom through works. So Mother gives a simple mantra to choose without preference and execute without desire. So desire, now comes the next thing. Well, who is the doer? What is the goal? So most often goal is some kind of personal satisfaction, gratification. It could be gross, it could be subtle, it could be 101 things. Again, as long as I am acting for my own personal gratification, then the action is of an inferior kind. For example, I may go and do a Bhagavat Katha. We have Bhagavat Saptah, you know. But my eye may be on the GPA account or the pot of money as Dakshina that I am going to get. That's not spiritual action. So outward action is not the real criteria. It is what is my goal. But if I do the same action with this idea that this is my service to the divine, and yes, money will come or not come, whatever is the thing that the divine will look after. You think we need sustenance or whatever. But that's not the goal in the mind. It's not being done with that idea. It's not being... So, see how subtle these things can be. So, renouncing desire is not renouncing action. Now again, see, motives are so important. Sri Aurobindo gives the example of Sri Rama. Is Sri Rama a renunciate or he is not a renunciate? Renunciate. But see, he is fighting a battle in Lanka to save his wife. He is a renunciate. He is not fighting only because, oh, my wife is gone. Because then he can have one of the two attitudes. Somehow he must get her back. Or, you know, it's better that anyway she is gone. That's the Maya. That's the will of the Lord. This is all Maya, Moha. God has liberated me from this Maya. I might as well sit and meditate in the jungle and realize. He could have taken that approach, no? That's what is normally considered as renunciation, sannyasa. And an average person will say, this is a good event in my life. God's leela. I could not have renounced, left Janki, and God has made sure. That would be the normal attitude. But look at Rama's renunciation. He is not doing it for any personal reason. And that is evident in the epic in so many ways. But that's a different story. Ramayana is wonderful. Mahabharata is wonderful. I have to resist the temptation to get into it. But he's doing it for the dharma. That's his reason why he has accepted, gone around. Because that is one of the missions. He feels like a divine angst within him. He feels it. Like it's like his own existence depends on that. And so he continues to go right up to that point, and path is open through challenges, difficulties, whatever. So it's not about externally that, well, a person who is not running after desire doesn't mean that, you know, his outer thing will be, no, I will not touch money, I will, no. It is again an inner renunciation. He is not doing it for this. He is not wearing a particular dress to impress. That, oh, I look like now a sadhu baba, a yogi, a saint. All the marks are within. That's what the Gita would tell us. So getting rid of desire is very difficult because it's the main mover in everything. So Sri Krishna gives us a very simple practice. And he goes on to say, he gives a set of six practices. But says, if you just do this, this is very powerful. It will free you. If persistently we act only as on the basis of what is known as nishkam karma. I'll do what I have to do. Maybe I'm making a wrong choice. Doesn't matter. But one thing should be clear. I'm not doing it to satisfy my desire. A lot of complications in the world will go away. Lot of quarrels, fights. It's a one-point solution. People fight. Because your desire, my desire, you know. When two people meet, they start with this, pehle aap, tu, tu hi tu. After some time it becomes tu or main. After some time it becomes tu, tu, main, main. So the meaning of this tu, tu, main, main is about quarrel. You see, if you act under the impulsion of nishkam karma, many of these things will just drop off. Life will be so beautiful, peaceful, happy. But it's a practice. It doesn't come just by listening. One has to apply it steadily, sincerely. So nishkam karma. So what is the object is nishkam karma. I don't want to fulfill any desire. Then why I will act at all? Why should I do anything? So here comes the great word of the Gita. That you are an instrument to fulfill my will. Now there is something new being revealed, which we don't find very explicitly in the Vedas and the Upanishads. So let me say, Gita takes one step forward. This idea that Gita is nothing but an essence of Upanishads is not quite right. I mean, something is there in the Vedas everywhere, but avatar, bhakti, aligning to the divine will, all these things come powerfully in the Gita. So the work is two words Sri Krishna uses, Lok Sangrahart, to carry the march of humanity forward. Thus I must act. And to fulfill God's will. Sarva Sankalpa Sanyasi, the divine impulsion should move us. Right now we are moved by many impulsions. But how will we know what is divine impulsion? Imagine there is a lot of noise going around. In between, divine also says something. He has a bad habit of saying very softly. Sometimes he will say very loudly, "Hey you, act." Most of the time he will say, "I think it will be better to do this way." And we are always with all the noises, we can't hear. That's why quietude, that's why learning to discern, disengaging from the surface noise, from the surface clamor. That's why the first thing is buddhi yoga. Turn the consciousness, the intellect, intelligent will inwards and upward, waiting upon the divine. I don't know what is your will. So again, it's a practice. It's easy to read and hear about it. I don't know what you want from me, but let me know. So what happens till we know? Till then we have to act in our highest. We'll have a range of things from very crude selfish interest to more and more disinterested action. So that's what the Gita describes as the three gunas. I may act mechanically. I don't know what the divine will is. Whatever is given to me, I am just acting. Mechanical drudgery. If I act mechanically, you see how many things we do mechanically. So, what is the result of it? It increases obscurity. Even if I give things mechanically without conscious discernment, it increases strangely obscurity. So that becomes even a danam done in a state of tamas, increases tamas. Basically, whatever is your originating stream, that will increase. Say, logic is very simple. So karma and its consequences are, well, if I act under the mechanical, unconscious, unthinking creature, then it will increase in me obscurity. And what is obscurity? It will bring dullness, it will bring disintegrative forces into play. All kinds of problems will come as a result of that. If I act under rajas slightly better, it will bring sukha and dukha, pleasure and pain. And if I act under sattva, is the highest in human beings, which means a more discerning intellect, a more rational, unselfishly, according to the highest values or highest ideals, what I should do, at least, you know, if I cannot know the divine will, I should act according to my highest ideal. That's where we see that, you know, Arjuna excels. He wants to act according to the highest ideals, which is sattva-guna. He says, I don't think I should kill my own people. It's not right. Okay, it's better that I walk into the forest. That's the ideal of sattva-guna. That's how he, you know, we read scripture and act according to that. And that's, but it doesn't set us free. So till we understand the divine will, we have to act according to the highest. So rajo sattva-guna, the devik sampada, and the tamo rajo-guna, which is the asuri sampada. Meaning thereby, I can act crass selfishly, or I can act for the greater good. I can act from the lowest common multiple, LCM. Why everybody acts? Everybody acts to make money. I must also act, LCM. Or I can act according to the highest common factor, that let me at least act under some idealism, which is good, but that is not karma yoga, but very good preparation, because now my ground is getting prepared through sattva. So all this is part of the yoga works. So who is the doer? Towards what the goal is, to serve the divine, to express the divine, for that I have to tune myself to the divine, so I have to become quiet. To do become quiet, I have to do nishkam karma with the only idea. So all this is package. Then comes this, that what is the energy apart from these three flow? Because if I act even under the highest impulsion, I'll still be subject to all these three flow, because there is no other flow. Now comes a greater revelation of the Gita. It says there are two kinds of mainly flows. One is the inferior, ignorant, lower nature. And the other is higher nature. Shri Krishna says very interestingly, he says, my nature. And he explains where all his nature is. Now that's a different subject, because Gita is not primarily the subject. But we have to learn to distinguish that there is a flow which is sattva, rajas, tamas. And there is a higher flow current, the original current, the divine shakti. It acts in such a way, it's beyond all our ideas. See, Napoleon was an instrument of the divine shakti. And you have to be so careful. He was an instrument. And there's a long story, so I'm not getting into it. And the day Napoleon started feeling that I am Napoleon and I am France and France is myself, she broke him and cast him aside. You have to be really ready to go with that higher flow, because then there is no you. No I, no instrument even. It's the divine action which is going through and through, using the body as a tool, the mind as a tool, the heart and life as channels. So that's where ultimately action can develop. It is the fullness of spiritual action that comes when we quieten the noises, then we can have a chance to hear the voice of the divine in our heart. And then we can act under that impulsion. But again, if desires are there, they will distort. I will act, but it will always be towards some outer gain or benefit I may derive. Even in ashrams, people may eye on a chair. In mutts, I have seen two Swamijis having a quarrel. He is a senior Swami or he is a junior Swami. I am senior. Why they invited him to inaugurate? They went cross for years, and the junior Swami was feeling so bad. He was asking me, did I do a wrong thing? It happens. So you see, it's not about the outer action. All actions can be either done from the lower nature or it can be done under the divine impulsion. Every action, which includes waking up, sleeping, eating, walking, listening, bathing, relationships, communicating, every war, all this can be done from a higher or from a lower nature, not just standpoint. Standpoint shifting is one thing, but opening to that higher impulsion, it requires still greater practice. So if we can do it, this path, in the beginning it feels difficult, because while engaged in action, you have to look inside your attitude, you have to keep turning inside, your intellect has to be open, you have to be conscious why you are doing what you are doing. See, meditation, you are given a time. 2 ghantas, 6 to 8, you sit and meditate. So it's fine. But this is an ongoing process. It's not something which you can do separately. So it's difficult in the beginning. The beauty is, as you proceed on the path, it enters into a grand trunk road. Widest path. Wherever you are, whatever you may be doing, you are constantly, it is the divine who is flowing, acting, thinking, feeling, willing through you. So you are in that state of constant contact. So it starts with little challenges, but still it is the most natural thing. But by changing the inner attitudes, inner motives, slowly making the choices based on our highest and then offering our highest also to the divine impulsion, by practice of nishkam karma, by practice of equanimity, because there will be a test. We can't just fool the divine by saying, so lovely, you have taught me nishkam karma. Ego must go away. Then lights will go away first. And then AC will not work in summer. Oof, so hot. But you thought the ego is gone. We can't fool the divine. So equanimity is a basic important practice. Should go on. Somebody insults you. Oh, you insulted me. You don't know who I am. Oh, okay. You have given away. So it's not as simple as simply giving a lecture or reading the Gita. It has to be, and it's only possible if one is vigilant and conscious, if one is sincere about the goal. Otherwise it won't work out. Somebody very dear to you, near to you, will pass an insulting remark. Oh, you don't know who I am. I am God's instrument. And God will laugh. He says, so? You got so angry? You feel insulted? Oh. I thought you said that, claimed that ego is gone. So, sincerity is basically required. And the last thing after which we'll open for questions is surrender. Because yoga implies there is something greater than us. Of course, it is the source, and in a deepest sense, we are one with the Lord. This is true. But this profound truth has to be realized by whatever path. If we do it without realizing that, yes, I am God, that's what Ravana said, Aham Brahmasmi. So one should be so careful. It's true that in our deepest essence, we are one with the divine. But till we realize it, we must know that consciousness here, trapped in form, in a limited sense, has to move toward that. When it becomes one with that, one doesn't have to say that I am one with the divine. The divine knows it, and that's the end of the story. And whatever that personality is there, it is used by the divine for his purposes, for his work. You carry no stain of sin because you have surrendered completely. You have no fear, no grief. So surrender is not just I have told God and everything. Surrender actually means that from now, you see, when General Niazi surrendered, no, in Bangladesh, yeah. Bangladesh, he surrendered. General Arora was Eastern. So what does it mean after that? After that, they can't say, you know what, I have surrendered, but basically I want to keep all my weapons and you have to give us 5-star accommodation. Say, look here, hello, you have surrendered. Yeah, we may give you, we may not give you. That's our prerogative. You have surrendered. So surrender implies from now on, I'll be happy with what the divine gives me. He may put me on a, you know, whatever star accommodation on a nice surroundings with nice colonnades and, you know, everything. Or he may put me in a hut with a carpet. So I should do neither. Sannyasi means, no, I will not sit in the 5-star hotel. It is, I'm a renunciate after all. No, I'll sleep on the floor. That's still the ego. That's attachment to the show of detachment. So if divine puts you, fine, it's his job. If today he has given you this, there's a nice line in Meera's writings. Says, kaho tum moti and mang jadava, kaho chitkara kesh. Good Lord, if you give me a string of pearls to put in my hair, I'll do it. But tomorrow, if there is nothing, I'll just let my head hair lie loose, because that's your will. I'm not dressing myself to please anybody else, but for you to fulfill your will. So, surrender means that. Surrender also means that now I will obey the divine will. It's understood, implied. What kind of a surrender if somebody keeps saying, I have surrender, but I'm going to do whatever I feel like. You say better, you keep your surrender. Surrender implies that I'll obey your will. Otherwise, there is no surrender. And it's the best thing to do, because divine is wisdom, supreme wisdom. He knows what is best for us. Actually, it's the most logical thing. We cannot see more than one step. Even one step we see very inadequately. But if we listen to the divine wisdom and act according to that will, he knows what is best for us. It means to stay always cheerful under all circumstances, smiling. Because he is with us, isn't it? We trust all kinds of people in this world. Can't we trust him who knows everything, who has brought us out? Who is mother, father, sister, brother, friend, beloved, comrade, playmate. I think it's more logical to trust. So the Gita speaks of a living relation with the divine, not just Brahma Jnana. So there are two Purushas in the Upanishad. Gita brings the third Purusha, Uttamam Purusha. That's how Purushottama in that sense. Uttama Purusha. Uttam Purusha is the divine with his personality. And it makes sense, because if you only talk about Brahman, who is an impersonal state, then where is all this personality, heart with love, mind with thoughts, life impulse, where is all this coming from? It's coming from the Purushottama. Only here it's in a miniature, deformed version. There it's the original. So it makes perfect sense. It means relating with the divine as a living entity. Most of us treat him like someone dead. So our surrender is also a dead surrender. Imagine, and with this I would stop. that mother is sitting here, Shubhendu is sitting here, just for a moment, just to live with this presence, how different everything in us will be. If any worry comes, we'll say, oh mother, this what is going on inside me, isn't it? After some time, when all the worries we have transferred, then we'll say, grow quiet, and say, mother, just be with us. That's all. When such a person does this, man mana bhava mad bhakta matyaji ma namaskaro, then sarva dharman parityaja. If you are walking with the Lord, then should you worry? You just do the Lord's bidding. Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. Okay, so I have a bad habit of continuing to speak with all kinds of stories coming up. But let it be like a question answer session.